You're listening to Racing Nation on RadioArian.com.
Hails and kill, comrades. Today's date is Tuesday, October 3rd, and you are listening to Race and Nation only on Radio Arian at RadioArian.com. Today with me is not my brother in fight. Lord Goyhammer is not gracing us with his presence tonight. He has actually wandered up north somewhere in the dark, great woods of Wisconsin doing whatever to... fuck he's doing, drinking meat out of horns last time I fucking saw anything on Twitter about him. But tonight, to fill his massive lordship shoes, I have a longtime beloved comrade of Race and Nation family, Vex Steele of the Women for Arian Unity joins us tonight. Hello, Vex Steele.
Hello, Mr. Lancer.
And how are you?
I am very good. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a long time since you've been on the show. In fact, I think this is your first Radio Arian show, so if anyone has been going through the archives, you may have run into a handful of shows, which we've included Vex Steele. We ran into Vex Steele on a very early show when we did a episode on women in the movement, and I reached out to her organization, Women for Arian Unity, and... one thing led to another, and we have been good comrades ever since. Vex, did you want to give the people here at Radio Arian a little background of your organization, what they do, who you are, and whatever else you feel like you need to fill in as far as information goes?
Yeah, sure. First, I'd like to say hello to everyone out there at Radio Arian, and thank you very much for listening to this great show that I am so in love with. Women for Arian Unity has been around for about... 25 years. We're established in 1991, and we've been going strong all these years. We do a lot of things really in the background. We have our website, WAU14.com, that we have free publications on there. There's booklets and all sorts of magazines that we do that you can print out for free. And we do raffles, and we just do a lot of stuff to help our brothers and sisters in the movement. Our big thing is we have a program called Adopt a Brooder, which is for the imprisoned men of the Silent Brotherhood. We are very close with them. Sisters and sisters of the past have been very close with them. We support them completely. Not only we help them financially, but we are there also to support them emotionally and, you know, spiritually and really any way we can. We encourage people to reach out to them, to write to them, and let them know that they're not forgotten. That's kind of a big deal because we all hail the 14 words and we hail the 88 precepts, which were created by our beloved David Eden Lane. And why wouldn't you want to support the brothers that basically paved the way for a lot of the core principles that we follow, you know, within this cause? We have a website, davidlane1488.com. that has all of David's writings on there, as well as different updates on the Silent Brotherhood. And a big thing is lately the website has been getting a total overhaul, and there's a lot of new things being put up almost daily at this point. So it's worth checking out every now and then, just popping in and seeing what's new. We also have various different book projects. Our latest book project was we had two books of David Lane's writings. One was his writings on Wotan's Folk, and the other one was all of his political writings. Those are available on lulu.com, and you can also follow the links from our website, weu14.com. Anything from these books, 100% goes to the Silent Brotherhood. We are working on another project. It's actually been in the works now for a little while. It's called 88 Views Behind Glass. And it is a compilation of essays of each precept, and the authors of each precept is their interpretation of the precept in modern times, because obviously these precepts were written, 30 years ago, or more. They mean a little bit different these days than I think they did then. David was very good about like kind of seeing how things were playing out for the future, but I don't think that completely the precepts follow today's structure of everything. So the people that write these are all men and women that are currently imprisoned. So they're not, their view is their view from behind glass because everything's so filtered. And I think everything is very, 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 very basic. So they're almost forced to look within a lot more because they don't have the distractions that we have. This has been a long time project trying to find people that want to get involved. I don't know how long it's going to be before it's released. It really just depends because everything's going through the mail. So it takes a lot longer and some stuff doesn't reach its destination and it's a little tricky, but it's going to be totally worth it because anything from that book, you know, goes right back into the cause. Anything that we do, it goes right back into the cause. We don't profit anything from anything that's on our website at all. And most of it's all, you know, available for free anyways.
Yeah, just real quick, I wanted to just touch base on the two books that are currently available through Lulu.com, one of which is absolutely one of my favorites. I've actually bought copies and have actually given it away as gifts to people who have been on the show or are affiliated with our show or people that I know personally or people in the movement that are interested in it. Because, it, like you said, the money goes right back to where it needs to go to. The book I'm talking about, and I always talk about when it comes to the WAU and what they produce, is the political writings book called Defiant Unto Death, The Political Writings of David Eden Lane. It is a fantastic book. Everyone that I've that's come across it and that I've given to him has always come back with excellent feedback about it. It is it's a good read for anyone and everyone. Somebody who's been in the movement for a long time, or for somebody who's just starting out in the movement that, you know, like people who've been on the show that have maybe been libertarian and have moved over, or people who were complete leftists at one point and moved over. I've supplied them with this book, and it has always helped them along their journey. It's good for resourcing. It's good for them to really get a hold of just not saying, you know, just not going around saying 14 and 88, but, you know, finding ways to utilize it in your everyday life from the person who actually laid it out for you. It's sectioned off in the book to where you can tackle just about any subject you come across in life. It's a really good resource. I really highly recommend it. The sales from the book go directly back into the movement. So it kind of goes fruition. It goes through its cycle, which is what's supposed to be doing. This is what we're supposed to be doing for each other anyway. So I really highly recommend checking it out. Go to Lulu.com, Defiant Unto Death by David Eden Lane. Consider purchasing for your library. It is a very, very good book put out by good people.
Hey, you know, and isn't there another alternative for people that are really busy, maybe people that have long commutes that don't have time to sit down and read a book?
Oh, boy.
I do believe there is an audiobook. Defiant Unto Death.
Yep, there is an audiobook of Defiant Unto Death. It was produced by me. Well, it is. I'm gonna be honest. I have very mixed feelings about it. It's not where I'd like it to be. I don't know if anybody's ever laid out an audiobook before. It's really hard. At least it was for me. It didn't end up where I would like. I definitely am planning on revisiting it at some point, but I'm not at that point yet. But I have made a commitment to myself at some point where it may be remastered. I'm almost teetering on actually redoing the entire project from scratch.
Really?
I don't know. There might be a completely different version out there in the future. I don't know. Yeah, there is a work print that's out there now. You can find it at the David Lane website, but you could also go to Audio Mac and just look up Defiant Unto Death, and it's there. Please feel free to email us at raceandnation@gmx.com, raceandnation@gmx.com. Feel free to berate me and make fun of me about all my mispronunciations, missteps, quirks, hiccups, coughs, farts. No, I'm just kidding. It's not that bad. But there are some technical issues, illiteracy, my horrible grasp on the English language, et cetera. So if you're interested in it, dig around. You'll find it. It was my gift to the WAU. I really wanted to help them out. I had all the zest in the world to get it done right, and I just found out that it was really difficult and not as smooth as I was going to think, and it's definitely not as quick as spitting out an hour-long podcast every week, I'll tell you that.
I think that it's a lot more time-consuming for a project like that than most people would realize, and the fact that you even chose to take it on, period, is admirable with all the 10,014 other things that you do. So, we thank you.
And thank you. So, yep, you can find it, Defiant Unto Death, audiobook. I think it's at Audio Mac. If you really want to find it, go ahead and email us and I'll send you a link. Or you can track down the David Lane website, and I know it's on there. And I am gonna come back around to it. I just don't know when. But I would imagine in wintertime, you know, when we're a little less active here in Wisconsin and we're kind of taking a little, you know, slower, and we're all kind of in the house waiting for the 12 feet of snow to go away. So at that point, I'll probably consider either cleaning it up or re-recording it. I'm kind of leaning towards re-recording it. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I don't know. I'll keep everybody posted since you kind of put me on the spot there, Vexer. So, yeah, she's good for that.
Well, you don't give yourself enough credit for what you do, so somebody has to.
I'll just probably edit everything out about the audiobook. No, I won't.
If you want to, you can, but I still think it's important that you give yourself credit, because I still think it's awesome. We all obviously do our own little thing to give back to the cause, whether it's, you know, stuff we do online or stuff we actually do in person, doing rallies, being part of a group. Some people it's a religious thing. Some people, you know, it's just a hobby or whatever. One thing I wanted to actually, I think it's important to touch base on, is the importance of acting within your local community and reaching out to what's going on in your community and finding ways that you can possibly impact things for the better. Obviously, in our extreme, unfortunate, diverse society, there's a lot of things that when you are trying to do for our own, you are going to have to do for the ones you don't want to do for.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
It really is. It really, really is. And I think that's where it's important that, A, people know their demographics. So it's like, okay, if you live somewhere that is only 10% white, I could see maybe not wanting to do a local charity drive because you're only helping 10%. But if you live somewhere where it's 90% white, then there should be no reason why you can't do local food pantries or charity drives for clothing or children's hospital toy drives, because at least you know that 90% of what you do will go back to our people. I think that's a lot of times people say, if it's not an all-white charity, I don't want to be involved. That's something I hear a lot. And I am not someone that's just going to go out and help anybody on a whim. But when I know 90% of what I do goes to my people, I will do it. And that's something that we also hear for the USA chapter of WAU, something we strongly believe in, is acting locally and uniting globally. It's on our banner, and it's an important thing, because when you're doing for your community, you are helping your community become stronger, become better. And in some way, when you do that and you actually bring our people together, even if it's not like rah-rah-rah nationalism, it's togetherness in another sense, and it's togetherness for the safety of your kids, for the safety of your property. You know, it's that kind of community involvement that the tighter we get with our own people, it will sort of squeeze out the icky ones, if you will. It'll get the degenerate filth out if people work together to make their community better.
I think a lot of that also lies within our natural way of being. Whites have a tendency to help, you know, to contribute, to produce, to strive, to grow. Just this evening, I saw a gentleman who was, you know, had a pretty big SUV, blew out a tire, was changing a tire by himself, two or three kids in the car. He was just doing it solo at the same time, trying to make sure he's entertaining his kids. It wasn't any danger. He was on a parking lot of a shopping center, but, you know, nobody was around. I could tell nobody had offered any help. I approached this gentleman and I said, "Hey, it looks like you have a handle on things, but do you need any assistance?" You know, he wasn't very polite. He wasn't real offish, but he was standoffish. I think he was just taken kind of aback that I was offering help. I don't know. I'm really not good about body language sometimes. But he was also holding a crowbar. So, and I was actually not armed, which was actually kind of unusual. I was just coming off of work and, you know, they don't allow me to carry a gun at the Jew factory. So I had just, long story short, I just wasn't armed. And he was kind of taken aback. I didn't startle him, but you could tell he didn't want my assistance, and he dismissed me. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I thought I'd ask. But that still goes back to what I was saying, though. It's kind of our natural instinct to help. And if you look at all the floods down in, you know, South Texas and the Gulf, you know, it wasn't fucking blacks and spicks and niggers doing most of the helping. It was decent, good white folk that was going down there, pitching in, cleaning up, and doing the heavy lifting as always.
Yeah.
And so when you're going out to, as you're saying, being charitable in your communities and neighborhoods, that's kind of tapping into nature's law of being a white person, where you just kind of want to contribute and you know, do that. That part of it is still bred in us quite a bit, especially with the women folk. I think the women folk are definitely more charitably minded than the men in our movement. And I would definitely consider doing some charitable work, but I think I'd be really selective, and I probably would seek an area that was predominantly white. For me in Milwaukee, I really couldn't see me contributing anything to this city. I don't prefer.
I can see you definitely wanting to go out to the suburbs.
Right. And it's, you know, and it's funny. I mean, you know, when I mean, when you have kids that go to school in other districts that are predominantly more white, you run into people and parents that, you know, that are white, but they're not racially minded, but you still have to like interact with these people like on a daily basis because of kids' birthday parties, gymnastics classes, you know, whatever else is going on.
You would be really surprised when you actually sit down and talk with people, you know, like I do some of these mommy groups and feel it's very, very difficult for me to approach, especially in my area, the moms. And it's like infiltrating the cheerleader squad. And I'm not kidding. Like, they're that fucking peppy. But trying to communicate with them kind of our ideals, but without being so brash about it. And you would be surprised how many of them are actually totally on board with how we think, how we want things. But if you keep it, if it's almost like, I don't want to say you have to omit certain things, but it's like little tiny baby spoon fed bits of information, you know, and especially when you start with the moms and when you start with the safety and well-being of the children.
Right. No,
boy, those moms will get the fuck on board with what you're doing quick.
Right.
Because it's our natural instinct to protect our kids above anything, you know, and when you become a mom, that instinct kind of kicks you in the ass and, you know, that's what you want to do, you know, and the men want to protect the entire family. So it's like the men are almost like the big umbrella and the moms are the little umbrella over the kids. But it's a lot easier for females to communicate because I feel like it's done almost in a different language.
I totally agree with that. And a lot of that on my end would be like, if you're stuck in a situation, which I have been often, where you're in a social situation because of your kids, it seems like the women folk always have something to talk about. And yes, of course, you have the children, which is blood. You know, that's that's your lineage. Of course, that's a common bond and a common, you know, foothold that you guys have, you know, together, you know, and it defines and crosses over all your other bullshit lines because you guys want to raise your children as healthy and as, you know, as well as you possibly can. For on the flip side of that, though, for men, it sucks. I can tell you that personally, from personal experience, it blows. I'm literally the only guy that doesn't like sports in the room, and they don't ever want to talk about anything but motherfucking sports. Sometimes I've actually, depending on my mood, I can just be dismissive and I'll just sit in the corner and talk to no one, or I have to sit there and just nod and go, There's nowhere for me to go because all these fucking people, all these guys are worshiping their fucking nigger athletes.
Yeah.
As their heroes or whatever. And, you know, and I'm not going to try to bring up some social quip about like, hey, you know, you guys, Red Siege or something, you know,
right.
You know, I mean, you can't sit there and say, hey, you know, we can't start dropping conversations about National Socialism. Every once in a while, I can kind of gain some footage if they tend to hunt. I haven't gone hunting since I was a youth, but that leads into firearms and shooting. And if I can get a foothold on that,
yes, there you go. At that point, I can talk
to some of them about some things. Mm-hmm. But it never goes very far. I mean, other than seriously, like none of these social situations for me have ever like developed into like some ran into somebody who's racially, you know, sound, you know, racially right. minded.
I mean, I guess the only segue I could think of is if you went from, you know, hey, that's a sexy AR to Second Amendment rights to
right.
You know what I mean? Freedom of speech to...
How do you feel about niggers? I mean,
Black Lives Matter is a bunch of idiots.
Right. What are you going to do? I mean, yeah, I guess with the social situation with BLM just doing what they're doing all over the place right now, it is a good springboard to start conversations with other whites, you know, with other white men.
Because right there, you're going to find out what line they stand on.
I mean, why not use their own... Why not use the BLM propaganda to your own advantage? I mean, if they're sitting there and they're being disgusted by what's going on in the NFL and you're in a social situation, bring it up. But in my own personal experience, it's never gone anywhere. And I usually end up being awkward or they think I'm awkward. And then we've had discussions where like, oh, I really like this one lady. My wife will say, I really like this person's mom and they're really cool. You know, maybe you and the husband can, you know, hang out and go shooting. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And also, let me tell you about Lanzer. Lanzer fucking hates 99% of fucking people out there. If you're not within my little group, like my inner circle, I want fucking nothing to do with you. But if you're, but if you're in my little group of circle, there's nothing I won't do for you. So
right.
It's, I don't know. I'm a weird guy, I guess. But anywho.
It is very tough. I almost think that would actually make an excellent coffee table book for white nationalists is, you know, some kind of how to have small talk with normies or, you know what I mean? Something yeah. ridiculous like that. Hashtag nationalism. Or,
and we've talked on the show before too, like that'd be a great utility for people who are going out there trying to quote unquote red pill people. Right. And I'm not that, I don't know. I don't feel like that's my mission. Like as a youth, yeah, but you know, back in the day when we're handing out pamphlets, we're hitting the street, we're doing whatever. It wasn't anything online, no internet. I don't go out of my way to quote unquote, you know, red pill people. I just like try to fill people out sometimes when I'm talking to them because their kid is interacting with my kid.
Right. Well, and I feel like that's the stage that we're at now. Yeah, right. we're not at the handing out flyers stage anymore. We're not even really almost at the rally stage anymore. We're at the stage of, you know, hey, we're forced into social situations because of our children and, you know, any involvement we have within our community. But that is, like you said, feel people out. And even if like you have that tiny hook, it's like use it and see where that goes. Cause I mean, I almost do it all the time too, without even realizing it.
Right. Yeah, I know.
And I feel like people that are programmed like we are, or deprogrammed, I should say, we have our eyes open. We're deprogrammed from what society wants us to think. And obviously the global agenda, you know, we don't follow it. I think that it's like a autopilot with, you know, how we talk about things. And you know, when people, you know, like say, you know, someone's talking about the stupid Emmys or whatever. And I'll go, you know, they mentioned like Lady Gaga. And I'll be like, oh, that degenerate. Yeah. Well, then that, of course, sparks an entire conversation of why I think her behavior is degenerate and why I would never in a million years let my daughter listen to her or music of the sort, you know, or even that culture, you know, why I would try to steer her away from it, you know. And then when you start talking about it and you kind of go through like the snowball effect of what it's introducing to their kids. And the like the indirect ways that their kids are being influenced on issues of, you know, transgender issues and things that they have no fucking business even thinking about yet.
Right. That yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Then when you start telling parents that and talking to someone about that, they're like, oh, you kind of do have a point.
Right.
You know, like I've had people say, oh, well, you really do actually have a point. You know, there's been plenty of people that have seen my work online, you know, and be like, you know, hey, I follow what you write about because it makes sense. You know, even though they're not a white nationalist, they don't believe in the hardcore principles of what we do. But again, what it comes down to is the security and the well-being of their children and their property. And that's where they're like, you've got some good points there.
That is a very familiar theme with people, well, from the women folk in our movement. Julia, who was on our show recently, and I don't know if you caught that episode. She's from New England, and she used to be kind of a leftist. And then after having some children, her views started shifting and shifting, and Obama happened, and they shifted even more. And now she's taking trips into the woods with Rockwell books. You know, she more or less red-pilled herself. It wasn't done by somebody like providing her information. It was literally her digging up the truth on her own and literally being so disgusted by what she thought she wanted in life, what her ideologies were, and in finding answers. And those answers were, you know, places that she obviously wouldn't normally support. And she just came to realization that she was a national socialist, and this is a commitment that she wanted to make. And, you know, and it had to do with the children, and it had to do with her family, and mm-hmm. it culminated into that. And I think with this particular political, you know, cesspool that America's in right now, and with the situation we're in right now with Trump and all this other BLM bullshit and all the other crap, it is nurturing an attitude and a conditioning in this country where people are looking for different avenues and answers. A lot of those people are falling into the alt-right. A lot of those people are even falling further than that to the far right and finding themselves in NS. So it seems to be a familiar story, you know, with the children kind of being the gateway and you just want to protect your children. I wish that men would focus more on that, but I think that the brainwashing on them to a lot of degree, because they don't have that born blood tie nurturing, you know,
right.
Not saying you're not a caring father. I mean, I adore my children. I love my children, but whether you want to argue the point or not, there is a special connection between mother and child.
Yeah.
And that a father does not share.
Men and women are different. And that is one of the differences.
And that comes back down though for a really great, like you said, like a really good springboard to introduce, you know, fill out people and whatever, but it's for men, it's completely more difficult. And what I'm more afraid of is like talking to somebody and then filling you out. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, this guy's like a crazy racist. And then they're calling fucking CPS on you. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I don't know.
That is another big, big scare is that, you know, they're going to think that you're a danger. You know, right. Especially with everything that people are spoon-fed on the news and exactly. In the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. So women have a little bit more finesse when it comes to communicating our ideals and being less brash. I don't think we will mention things as much as National Socialism. I think we're a little more careful about the terminology that's used. And it's, again, it's the spoon-feeding of little bits that we think that somebody can handle.
I agree with that because I'm so dismissive. Like, I'm just like, okay, whatever. You're watching.
Yeah, because I mean, the second you start going, Hitler was right, you know, they're going to think you're fucking crazy. Yeah. You know, and then, yes, you're going to see Child Protective Services at your fucking door because they're going to think that you're, you know, Sieg Heil and whatever else in your house that apparently they think is illegal, which, I mean, obviously there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, it is like a witch hunt for our kind. So it's, that's where it almost seems borderline dangerous, but I also think that the only real danger is the fact that the left has tried to portray it as it is dangerous for us when it's not. Is they try to instill this fear that is completely unnecessary and people believe it.
Right.
Because they forget that we have a thing called the Constitution that does protect us in some respects.
And so, yeah, I don't know.
That's why I say in some respects.
Yeah, again, we're losing a lot of foothold on that.
Behind closed doors. You know, it doesn't matter what you're reading. It doesn't matter what you're watching as far as your political beliefs. Right. You know, they can't knock on your door and arrest you for that.
Yet.
They'll try to. But going back to, you know, women and the movement, I actually did want to mention kind of a little a hashtag that WVU has been using a lot lately. Femininity over feminism.
Right. I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big thing that we are trying to remind people of and get out there. Because I think a lot of people forget and they think that you are, they think that you are a feminist because you are trying to protect issues that belong to femininity. And for instance, you know, would be breastfeeding, going out and being an advocate for breastfeeding, you know, wherever, and it being completely natural. Some people think that's actually like a feminist issue when it's not. It's an issue of femininity because that is something that we are meant to do as women.
Right.
I think another issue that people forget about is domestic violence. You know, wanting to say, hey, it is not right for you to treat a woman that way. That's not being a feminist. That's protecting issues around femininity. Wanting to see the well-being of women is not a feminist issue as it is an issue of femininity when it comes to our movement. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to throw that out there because that's something that I think a lot of people, you know, I have a lot of people that'll say like, you know, oh, well, you have feminist viewpoints. And it's like, well, no, I don't. I am pro women and our movement speaking the fuck up for issues right. that have to do with women. I mean,
yeah, I hear a lot of that shit being thrown around a lot of times, and I don't want to get into the whole white Sharia bullshit, but there's a lot of even more subtle stuff than obviously the white Sharia bullshit. There's a lot of that in the movement, and it's completely counterproductive. I guess you would need to be versed on what you believe is femininity versus feminism. You know what I mean?
And I think too, a lot of ideals, like people so bad want to go back to like more of a golden age. And within that golden age, women were not vocal politically.
Right.
So I think it's like in some ways you have a mass group of men in our movement that want to backpedal. And within that backpedaling, part of that is putting women back in the shadows. They don't want, you know, because a lot of that women were not political. And again, it was when women voiced their concern on issues, it had to do with home, family, and children.
Right.
With, you know, the well-being of that. But when it came to the more general political ordeals, women were not, it was extremely rare to find a woman, you know, and the women that were vocal were generally not very accepted because it was like, oh God, you know, I mean, it was even like part of etiquette, you know, speak when spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in some ways, when you have an outspoken female, especially a female that is going to speak out against issues that men seem to think irrelevant, then yeah, they're going to be like, well, who the fuck are you, loudmouth? You know, like, go back to the kitchen. And it's just, you know, then of course, I'm just like, I have more worth than the kitchen. And
well, you know, I mean, it's, fuck, dude, I don't even know where to start with that. Our numbers are so low and we're so few and far between that kind of mindset was a convenience, I guess, that we could afford back when pulling levers and living in a homogenous democratic society was, you know, was working to a certain degree in America. And we're not at that point anymore. How do I explain this? I mean, yeah, we need women who are going to have our children. I get that. But we also need shield maidens too. You know, we've been through this before where we need women. You know, I mean, it's like,
I mean, look what happened during World War II. And I guess World War One as well. That's a
good point.
All the men went to war. Who stayed behind and took care of the country? The women did. Right. Who stood up, worked in the factories to produce the weapons and the ammunition and the bombs to support the war. The women did. And while the women were doing that, they were also still caring for their children. They were also still caring for their home.
Right.
And how many of these women lost their husbands in the war? Well, what then? It wasn't like daddy was coming home and then taking over and mommy can go back to the kitchen. No, you then had a single widowed mother with children that had to figure out a way to support their family.
Right.
And I think that's where, that's almost like the society that we have now, only we don't so much have necessarily that kind, obviously we don't have that kind of a war creating the separation of husband and wife, you know, now, right, which is the divorce rate, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's why it's important that women not only uphold a traditional lifestyle, but they know and have the skill set to maintain in case something happens.
Right. I agree with that.
Because the likelihood of something happening, I feel like, is a 50-50 shot. And I don't mean that your husband and or boyfriend, you know, or your boyfriend is going to, you know, be dead in a war. I mean that, who's to say they're not going to pick up and leave?
Right.
How often does that happen? Divorce, you know, separation. You're left having to care for the children that they, you know, gave you. And I just, that's why I think it's important, because not only are they leaving you, they're also, you know, they're, not only are you forced to provide for your family financially, you're also forced to protect your family. And I know that's the subject we've touched on, is that women need to know how to do that in case your male is not around.
Right. I'm a big advocate of that. I mean, just self-defense and firearm ownership.
And this day and age, you have to be.
Yeah. And I'm not talking like, I know how to use my husband's rifle if he loads it for me. I'm talking, no.
You got it in your purse.
You literally go out to the store, you purchase a weapon, you learn how to use said weapon, you know how to maintain, clean, and utilize it. That's what I mean. That's a big difference. And you start with the children. My children, you know, have at one point or the other been versed in firearms, and we have a huge respect for them. And, you know, gender does not equate to firearm usage in the lands or household. You're expected to learn how to use a weapon. That's going to obviously carry with them into adulthood. And we don't live, nor are we going to live, in a society where the women in our movement are not going to be depended on, you know, to the degrees you mentioned, but, you know, during other facets, during the balkanization and us separating and whatever, you know, what the future entails for us as a white race.
Yeah.
It's going to be a completely different atmosphere than it is now, what it was then.
Like, worse.
That mindset is just, I don't know, a lot of it just smells just really Jewy to me. And it's just counterproductive. It sets against our movement because it doesn't allow us to march forward together. And then we're going to have to do that.
And especially, too, we keep talking about the idea of an ethnostate and really, really trying to make that not just an idea, but an actual reality. Right. And something that's going to be important for that is not only to have women that want to be involved for the sake of role of wife and mother, but also, too, you're going to need more people to actually build the community. So you need people with different skill sets.
Right.
Actual trade skill sets.
I think that with women folk, and just like you would your son, you know, you find a skill set they're interested in, but can do, and you know, utilize them. Not all the women in our movement, and this is going to be a hard reality for some people, not all the women in our movement are going to be ones that are going to want to stay at home and raise children. Some will want to raise children, and they'll still want to go out and fight.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a huge I can already see there's going to be a huge contingency on who gets to do what. And that right now, and that's fine. That's an argument for another day. But at this point now, our numbers are just so low. We're so few and far between. We're getting caught up on this whole this women issue, if you will. It's just, like I said, all the way from the white Sharia thing, which I've been berated on all kinds of different fronts, that you're taking it too seriously. It's just a meme. It's just this. Yeah. And it was brought up to me by a comrade, and I dismissed it. I fucking destroyed it. And I continue to do so. It's ignorant. It's very ignorant and short-sighted, and it's counterproductive, and it's divisive, and it's not going to get us to where we need to be.
Yeah.
It's just not.
And also too, I feel like joking about raping our own women is kind of rude.
I think it's beyond rude. It's
I'm being nice by using
I haven't heard that.
You don't fucking joke about that kind of thing.
Where have you heard that? I haven't heard that anywhere.
It's oh, you have heard that?
No, I've heard the white Sharia thing, but not the
whole, it was tied into the whole like white Sharia.
Really?
They were basically saying that like our women that maybe our maybe the white woman needed raped into submission.
Wow.
Kind of thing. Yeah, I saw that in one message.
Now, okay, so how you someone break that down for me. Someone fucking contact me and you tell me how that
how does that make
live in
sense?
14? How does that live in 14?
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? The thing that I find is that's where I see almost like a divide within the movement is the people that would joke about that and speak on those terms and talk. And the same thing, the people that would talk about white Sharia being a good idea. These are the same people. I've gone through their feeds. I've gone through their pages. They don't have any mention of the 88 precepts. They don't have any mention of David Lane. They don't have any mention of the Silent Brotherhood. They don't have any mention of the 14 words. So to me, I feel like the core principles and almost our movement's set of laws is not even recognized by these people. And I don't know what facet they think they're in. It sure as shit isn't. If they, you know, obviously they stay in their own corner. And I think these are more the people that you see trolling on the internet and they're not really making any fucking impact.
That doesn't make any sense to me. It's about loving and protecting and fighting our own for our own.
I mean, even when you look at the ideals of National Socialism, you know, the core ideals of National Socialism, these people don't even adhere to that.
Right.
So I don't think they have a clue. It really is what it is. I think that they were like, I'm going to rebel today. And that's how they did it.
Wow.
They were like, oh, I'm going to be a white nationalist.
Well, that's so irresponsible.
Then you don't kid about, you know, the same thing of you don't kid about wanting to even put our women into a position of submission, like the white Sharia thing that, you know, that they need like reprogrammed and reconditioned. You know, I don't think there's anything to that because if you want to, it's like if they want to put it that way, that we are the ones that are broken and need reprogrammed. Well, I could tell you there's a shit ton of fucking nationalists that need fucking reprogrammed that they think it's okay to go around and just fuck women and, you know, not take any responsibility for their actions.
Yeah, that's,
you know, it's like that whole like bro joke, you know, they get a pat on the back. But a woman will get shamed. You know, I'm not saying that I think it's.
But that's how niggers act.
Yeah,
that's how niggers are. We're all gonna act, we're walking around acting like fucking niggers by claiming we're all white nationalists.
Absolute niggers.
That's what I don't get. That's all nigger talk, nigger attitude. It's Jewry. I don't know the reason why it's put out there. I'm just saying it stinks of Jewry. I'm not gonna name names or drop organizations or websites, but everyone knows who the fuck we're talking about.
And I mean, honestly, too, who's to say that all of this isn't some big ass fucking joke by some infiltrator?
Exactly.
In the first place.
Yeah, controlled opposition, of course.
You know, because obviously it's something that distracted us from things, you know, as far as it triggered us.
Yeah, of course it triggered us. Yeah, exactly. Right.
And I think that I think anybody that wasn't fazed or wasn't triggered by this, they need fucking questioned.
Right.
Because, but it's just, ugh.
And for future reference, if you guys are digging around our archives, which can be found at LanzerandGoyhammer.com, LanzerandGoyhammer.com, we always post the most recent episodes and there are links to our archive. If you check out shows number 43, which aired July 4th, 2017, titled Support Your Local White Girl, which I actually ended up changing to Support Your Local Ladies because I was trying not to get motherfucking deplatformed. Episode 43, we introduced the degenerate concept of Sharia law that was submitted by another comrade who is supposed to join us tonight, Paige. So then Paige actually followed up with Support Your Local White Girl 2, which we changed to Support Your Local Ladies 2, dated 7/25/2017, and that is episode number 46. So check out episodes 43 and 46. Vex and Paige visit Race and Nation, and we tackle the entire white Sharia bullshit degeneracy topic, and we pretty much stomped it to death. So if you really want to hear us kick some ass on that, I do highly recommend you check out the archives.
Something else that I would like to recognize that yesterday was David Tate's birthday. Happy birthday, David Tate.
Happy birthday, David Tate. Awesome.
We sent him I always send birthday cards out to a lot of the guys that I write. And if you've ever like gone to the store and tried to purchase a card for somebody that's imprisoned, it's really fucking hard.
I imagine they don't produce any cards for said person in prison, but I could be wrong.
They really don't. Right. But you know how like so many of the birthday cards are like, you know, oh, hope you enjoy all the cake and live it up and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to send somebody that you know can't, quote unquote, live it up. God, it's so depressing. Like, I actually get bummed out when I go card shopping to the point where I'm really going to, at some point, I'm actually going to just start
making cards.
Yeah, I'm going to actually make some like special WEU cards. No, that's for birthdays neat. And for mm-hmm. Yule that have maybe some poems and writings that we like. I'm going to like mm-hmm. make it like a project thing. Sometime.
That's kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Because last year I made a whole bunch, but like I've expanded because of the 88 views behind glass. The amount of people now that I write to has like tripled. So I don't have time to sit down and like, I mean, I guess if I start now, I can make like, I write like 40 some odd people.
Do you think you'd be able to like produce cards that you could send off and like have them mass produced so you'd have them at the ready?
That's what I'm going to do. Is I'm going to look on like maybe Vistaprint or, you know, one of those ones.
That's actually a really good idea.
Even online at like walmart.com or any of your stores, they have the little project makers mm-hmm. that you can make cards. You know, you could upload a photo to it and you can make cards. And I know a lot of people are scared about uploading photos. And I'm sure like if you're uploading, say like a Schwazi or I don't know, something that's obvious. Right. But if you were to upload like maybe a Black Sun, when they print that out, they're not going to know what the fuck that is.
Right. Just be smart about what you're going to upload.
Exactly. Because I know so many people.
Hell, I'd love a card from you of Adolf. But, you know, I mean, you're not going to go up and upload that as some generic, you know.
You know what, though? I still think I could. and I just might now.
Well, I don't know. Just you really, you. But you, thanks.
I'm actually making a note of this because, plus it'll make a good test to see if it works.
Oh, Jesus. Make sure you don't melt to my ass before the feds come knocking on the door. Are you Miss Steele? No. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's cool. I really think that's a great idea of producing cards for the brooders or anybody who's, you know, like you said behind glass. I think that's really, really inspiring. I think that'd be really neat. You know, you could tailor it to, you know, whatever you want. And I don't know. That's a good idea. I think that is.
Really once I do it, too, I'll probably actually try to figure out a way to upload it to our website. So that way people could just print it out.
Oh, that'd be a good idea.
You know, because you could just go to the store and you could buy cardstock paper and then you could just print it out and just cut it. You know, yeah, you got to DIY it a little bit, but all the bulk of the work will already be done.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something to look for in the future.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Because, I mean, it is a hard thing to do. You know, we know a lot of people. And I mean, even so, it would still be something nice for, you know, giving to a fellow comrade.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily just have to be something for, you know, someone imprisoned. I would just love to have a birthday card that actually has something a little more meaningful than
something
like
a little personalized, but at the same time,
that
you know?
Doesn't like bum me out or potentially bum the other person out.
Right. That's pretty thoughtful. Yeah.
Cause it's just, I swear to God, like I will be in the stupid card section for like 15 or 20 minutes trying to find something. And then I start getting all weepy because then I'm thinking about that they can't do these things and that I'm out here enjoying my freedom and that they, you know, sacrifice so much. And then it's like snowballs and just totally bums me out by the end of the day.
Yeah, but what I'm always impressed with though about you, Vex, is that you find that situation, but then you always find like a solution. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're a very giving and caring person and you go off and you do these things, which is, you're way nicer of a person than I am, but at the same time, what I always find interesting about you is that you come across a situation or a problem, and then you come up with a really pretty good idea on how to like resolve it. So every time I talk to you, there's always like this really like, oh yeah, I started doing this because I ran into this roadblock, but then I'm going to start doing this to resolve it. I'm like, your problem solving skills are really good. That's a real good asset to have.
Thank you.
My youngest is like that, and my oldest, well, my boy, not so much with the problem solving skills. So I don't know. I think that's a really cool skill set to have. And I've always been really impressed about how you've been able to solve situations or things you've come across working with the WAU or trying to improve life for the brooders. And there's always been, like I said, you always find some kind of roadblock, but it always seems like you come up ahead with like some kind of workable solution. I don't know. I'm always impressed by that. That is really neat.
I try to put myself into their position because I have so much respect for what they did and what's come out of it, you know, especially like David Tate. I mean, him and I, we write back and forth all the time, and he is such a caring soul, and he has so much ambition, and like the way that he words things, it always seems like he's in a good mood. You know, I don't know if he is or isn't, but he always is inspirational in his writings, and he's always very, very caring and uplifting. And considering where he is, I should be the one to be like constantly uplifting. I mean, I try to always like bring something funny to him, you know, so I can like picture him smiling when he's reading my letter, because, you know, I just think about being in the gulag for 30 fucking years.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and especially for, you know, being away from your family and just, it's hard. And then seeing how little support is there now for them. You know, it's something that just upsets me even more. You know, it shouldn't be so difficult to try to get them a pair of shoes. You know, simple shit like that, you know. Right. Then again, a pair of shoes is not like going out to Walmart and spending $20. You know, all their shit that's in their little store is jacked up like 1,000%. So it's very, very expensive. You know, and it's not something that's just provided. So I think that's, again, it's a lot of those things that we take advantage of every single day. And I really do think about them a lot in what they go through. You know, and I think more people should, because then more people might be willing to be like, you know what, I would like to help.
I had a quick question about the brooders, and I'm not sure if you can answer it or not. But are any of them, and there's not very many left, I know that, but the ones that are behind the wire still, are they allowed, you know how David Lane was able to produce these political writings, are there any of them that are still producing any type of political essays or writings?
David Tate.
Is there an outlet for that at all? Because I don't see anything produced. Like, I don't run across anything that's,
you know,
up
what,
on the
there's
internet or
nothing really, nothing as produced as David.
Right.
He doesn't have as much. He does a lot of stuff for a lot of different websites. Like, a lot of different people will ask him, like, hey, can you do blah, blah, blah. Now, thankfully, he will actually forward us a copy of stuff that he does. Like, for example, he did a Greek word studies for Christian separatists, an essay on that. And it was a big, like, translation thing. And it took him a long fucking time to do it. And it was for somebody else, but he forwarded us too. It's actually available on our website, davidlane1488.com. And there is some stuff up there that David wrote. He is extremely inspirational. And I definitely encourage people to read what we do have of his and send him a letter. Because he is actually one of the few guys that has a typewriter.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good utility.
Which is super exciting. Because I can read his letters very clearly.
Now, David Tate, he has a life sentence, right?
He does.
Right.
Yes.
So basically, as far as, you know, worrying about being paroled or a parole board pissing them off, I mean, he can pretty much, as long as there's no rules and regulations about what he can, I don't know if there's any rules and regulations of what he can accept or cannot accept.
I mean, you just want to be smart about what you're doing. You don't want to be, like, super brash about you talk about things. You want to word things intelligently, and it will reach him.
Right.
But no, he's not on as much restriction as the other guys. I think that's just kind of an important thing.
I do too. And you can get all this information and even more at WAU's website, WAU14.com, WAU14.com, a lot of which is surrounded and embedded in the Bruder Schwiegen, which is what we've been talking off and on about tonight. I want to thank my very good comrade, Lord Goyhammer, for leaving me on my own and abandoning me. And I want to thank my other really good comrade, Vex Still, the WAU, for pretty much saving the show tonight. Thanks, Vex.
Oh, thanks for having me. Even though we couldn't have the great Goy, even though the reason I'm here is because the Lordship himself had to go north and hunt moose or whatever the fuck he's doing.
Yeah, I don't really know what he's doing. He's been pretty vague. We had like a birthday dinner for him this week, and I got a bit too much to drink, and I was kissing everybody on the forehead by the end of the evening. And yeah, it was a good time. Good time had by all. Want to say a big hells to Sven Longshank, the captain of Radio Aryan. I've been really enjoying the Truth Will Out Radio, Why the Alt-Right Needs National Socialism, Part 1 and Part 2, where they actually go through all 25 points of the Reich's National Socialist Program. Very good listen if you haven't listened to it. His co-host has been Dennis Wise, and if you don't know who Dennis Wise is, he put out a fantastic documentary titled The Greatest Story Never Told. And so I really highly recommend you listen to those two programs. Everyone in the Race and Nation family, I want to say hell victory and see you at the Rahoa.
I would just like to thank you, Sir Lancer, and Lord Goyhammer for having me on tonight. It's always a pleasure. I love when you have me on and we can just rant and rave about all the things that bother us. And I hope that everybody listening tonight and Radio Aryan have enjoyed tonight's show. If you have any questions about the WAU Sisterhood, you can send all inquiries via our website, WAU14.com. And also check out our other site, DavidLane1488.com, for all the great updates that have been done to the site. Hail victory!
Hail victory, sister. Thank you.
Thank you.
This editorial podcast is a general discussion of certain aspects of human and political dynamics. It does not advocate, pledge, or incite any individual or group to commit unlawful acts of violence against anyone.
Fuck 'em!